Hey, this is Jesse. We're 5 years into the Behind the Scenery podcast now, and every now and then, we unearth some audio files from the early days. This episode was recorded almost exactly 5 years ago in the summer of 2020, the first year of the podcast. It's a conversation between Brendan, an interpretive ranger whose main job is to give talks and answer visitor questions, and two backcountry law enforcement rangers, Kate and Jacob. You'll hear Brendan speak first. The episode was recorded at the Phantom Ranger Station at the bottom of Grand Canyon, so you'll hear some radio chatter in the background. Enjoy the episode.
Grand Canyon, where hidden forces shape our ideas,
beliefs, and experiences.
Join us as we uncover the stories
between the canyon's colorful walls.
Probe the depths
and add your voice.
For what happens next
at Grand Canyon.
And welcome.
Okay. This is Jesse.
This is Emily.
And this is...
This is
Behind the Scenery.
All right, go. What different jobs do you have that people may not be aware of?
Helicopter crew member.
Leave no trace trainer.
Ooh.
Climbing ranger.
Swift water rescue technician.
Victim witness services coordinator.
Oh,
geez. Wildland firefighter.
Yeah.
Shoe repairer. Backpack repairer.
Cobbler.
We didn't cover this, but informal interpreter.
I would say it's a huge part of your job.
Or actually, along those lines, I'm also a language interpreter.
Yeah, you are a language interpreter. For Mandarin?
Sanitation worker.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
Weren't you nominated for an award for cleaning toilets when...
I got a fake award.
Oh, yeah.
Decorated with, gilded toilet paper tubes.
That's pretty official.
It's in my file.
Okay.
It's in my employee file. Oh, emergency medical technician.
Yeah.
Yep. I would say also trail worker.
Mm-hmm.
Trail maintenance, if you will.
Yeah.
Acting search and rescue coordinator.
Yep. Mm-hmm. What are we missing? Oh, high angle rescue technician.
Mm-hmm. I would say you're also cooks. I've seen both of you cook a lot of food for a lot of people. A lot of ramen.
Yeah, this is true.
Emotional caregiver.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the biggest thing. I would say cheerleader for you too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
You can get out. You can do it.
I would say I'm a resource technician. Mm-hmm. I try to do like archaeological monitoring or report paleontology or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I bet there's more, but I... Oh, you got one more?
I got one more. I'm trying to think how you would word this. A swearer in of junior rangers?
Yeah.
How would you say
that? Are you deputizing them?
Yeah, so maybe like... Sheriff of the Junior Rangers.
Or a master of ceremonies. Yeah. Well, I think I've seen both of you, like you just were out doing like emergency medical technician stuff or like had a law enforcement contact and you walk into the station and without missing a beat, there's Junior Rangers and you're like, boom, swearing in. I'm like, how did they do that? It's like two different parts of your brain. All right. So... what is an example of when something funny happened from wearing too many hats?
So, so this actually refers back to my previous park, which was Death Valley, hottest place on the planet. And, yeah, it's really hot. So one of the things that goes on there is that, you know, because it's a valley, that would imply that it's walled in by mountains on either side. So in terms of fires that occur in that park, with it being Death Valley and not a lot of vegetation to burn, it's usually cars or vehicles that burn, either coming into the valley because they're burning up their brakes or coming out of the valley because they're burning up their engines. So all the rangers there are, in addition to law enforcement, EMS and such, they're also structure firefighters. And structure firefighting obviously involves a lot of training to keep up your skills. So there's one day where all of us were gathered together and we were training with the fire engines, you know, pulling water from the hydrants and just practicing evolutions, which is, you know, pulling the hose off and charging them with water and then spraying on a fake fire and all that. So if you picture the entire on-duty staff of Death Valley National Park, so that would be something on the order of like 10 or 12 rangers, all in the firefighter turnouts, which you never get unless you're in training or on a real fire. And then suddenly out of the blue, dispatch calls and says, hey, there's a car burning about 12 miles away. And we all just look at each other and we're like, hey, we're ready to go. And there's a in unison, yay! And we all just jumped in the fire engine. And of course, you know, couldn't all fit in the fire engine. But yeah, we all jumped in the appropriate number of vehicles. And our response time to that fire was probably the fastest you'd ever get at Death Valley because everyone was ready to go. And then, of course, immediately afterwards, we all switched back into our regular park ranger uniforms and go about our business. But that was one of those fun instances where, you know, you're a park ranger, where you're actually dressed and perform. You're a park ranger, but you're actually, for an hour or two during this day, dressed as a firefighter. And that just so happened to be exactly what was needed at the right time.
Lucky hat. You had the lucky hat.
Yeah, we had the
on.
Lucky hats on.
Yeah. I do want to hear from you as well, Kate, but are you two like me where you forget you're in uniform sometimes? And then in my role, I go up to someone, like, start telling them about lizards, and they're like, who is this weird person?
Oh, like, when you're not in uniform?
Yeah, because I forget I'm not in uniform, I'm not identifiable, but, you know.
I'm acutely aware of the 10 pounds of defensive equipment on my waist. So when I'm not wearing my duty gear, I'm like not working.
Cool. Yeah, I would second that. I think it's not just the weight, but you know, it just, I think when I take the uniform off, I can relax a bit. And that just extends into whatever I'm doing when I'm not at work. So
yeah, well, I think one thing, too, that I've realized is that I see all of the things that I, as a professional, should be concerned about, but, you know, we see them all the time. And so on my days off, when I'm not in the place that I work or not, I still see all of the safety issues that need addressed, and you have to really stop and think about, like, what is the right thing to do, like, will I be safe if I interject myself into something? Do I need to call somebody else who's ready to respond to this safety thing here? And as a park ranger, we have to know a lot about the things that we need to do to take good care of this place and ourselves in it. And I think it's really important to not be that, you know, citizen out at the climbing area who is just in everybody's business about everything that they're doing wrong and in the minutia. Like I, you know, it's, you just have to let some things go and really weigh what it's worth. Like there's been a fire ban and I found multiple fires out on the national forest. And, you know, it's, you have to really weigh the risk. Like what's the benefit of taking action when you're not working?
And that actually goes towards a tendency, at least among visitor and resource protection rangers, that can be kind of dangerous in terms of our mental and emotional health. In that, you know, at the end of the day, we need to recognize that this is still, it's just a job. Mm-hmm. It's not our identity, and it doesn't define us. Mm-hmm. So I was a victim of this when I was a lot younger too. Rangers for whom this job becomes their identity and defines them, and it takes over their life both while they're working technically on the clock, but also while they're not working. So it's good to consciously create that separation between work and not work in that instance, because I think for most park rangers, a lot of us do a lot of the same things while we're not working.
Like you still hike, climb, and you're still out.
We still spend time out in the outdoors. Yeah, even if it's not in our own park, But we still, by virtue of being park rangers, recognize what's allowed and what's not allowed in terms of regulations, wherever we may be. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's like Kate said, you have to be cognizant of that and balance the benefits versus the disadvantages of speaking up or acting. And I think as time has passed, I recognize more and more the value of not acting while I'm not in uniform in order to preserve or sustain my mental health.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's something that, I'll just say, like, that's something one of my very first supervisor in this job kept stressing, and I never figured it out till well after she retired. So I figured it out eventually, but yeah, it's something that younger rangers, I think, definitely need to watch out for, or at least be coached by more experienced rangers to be cognizant of.
Good to know.
Yeah, there's a lot of learning from letting people fail.
That's just true too, yeah.
And like, yeah, especially if it's safe, like not interjecting and micromanaging mm-hmm. and letting people make decisions that, you know, they're gonna learn from is highly valuable.
Is that hard to let people learn that lesson?
I worked for Outward Bound for 6 years, and so I would let my students in the woods make mistakes for days before we corrected them if we knew it was safe. And I like things to be efficient, and I like for things to be within my control. And that was a good lesson to learn in my early 20s, that like people are going to do what they're going to do, and that really shapes how I interact with folks and what sort of approach I take. And that, like, really, like, their decision and their freedom is going to be really impactful for them. And so there's not a whole lot of non-negotiables for me down here. Like, there's a lot of gray area.
Yeah.
And it very much depends on the person that I'm interacting with. What do you think, Jacob?
Well, I can come at this from the perspective of a field training officer. So mm-hmm. one of my duties when I'm not in the canyon is as a field training ranger for the new park rangers who have just completed their training at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. They get sent out to a national park that is pretty busy in terms of law enforcement cases for 11 weeks to be evaluated in the field, dealing with real life situations with the field training ranger looking over their shoulder and giving feedback and suggestions and so on. So in my time as a field trainer, I've seen a lot of rangers and how they problem solve. And it's true, I don't know where this comes from, but I know it's been shown with psychology that there's psychological studies that show that failing at a task is one of the best ways to learn how to do that task properly rather than always succeeding. And so, again, this is in the context of law enforcement, so I have to balance letting this new ranger fail at what they're doing versus potentially having a safety issue with their failure. So it's like Kate said, as long as I recognize, as long as I can see that this failure won't put this ranger or myself or anyone else in danger, I let them fail. And then that gives me something to work with afterwards. We sit down after the interaction is done with, and we just walk through it again and talk about what went well and what didn't go well, how we can improve things. And that always seems to work better than constantly interjecting and preventing that trainee, that new ranger, from making mistakes.
It sounds like that mentality and that role as like a teacher isn't just for other rangers, it's also for other visitors.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, all of those techniques apply to how we interact with visitors. Again, the diversity that we see on the trail in Grand Canyon, like, I never approach a visitor assuming their worldview. And so I feel like we try to present facts and tools so that people can take those and put them together with their worldview to shape their experience. I don't know what their expectations are of their interaction with this place, with the rest of their group. It's I think that's one of the coolest things about being in Grand Canyon, but I don't make any assumptions about what people are coming for. Try to help them do it in a way that's safe and that takes care of the place. And that's like really the bottom line. It looks different for everybody.
Why did you become a ranger?
So this goes back to, you have to go many, many years into the distant past, but way back when, I didn't actually have a plan as to what I wanted to do with my life. When I entered into college, I just studied the best subject that I had in high school, which was physics. Later on, I tacked on astronomy to it because I always had an interest in astronomy and in space exploration in general. But that, oddly enough, is what led me to the Park Service. I was studied at the University of Texas at Austin, and UT Austin has an observatory out in West Texas near the town of Fort Davis called the McDonald Observatory. And once a year, the astronomy club would take a trip out there for various purposes. The one time that I went, we utilized some of the smaller telescopes at the observatory to take pictures of astronomical objects in space, to then utilize for promotional material for the astronomy department at University of Texas. So that's all during the nighttime. Well, because of course we're like 20 something years old, or 20, so we got boundless energy. So even though we're up all night taking photos through telescopes, and during the daytime, we still want to get out and play out in West Texas. So one of those day trips we took was down to Big Bend National Park. And that was my first national park that I visited as an adult. So the first national park that I visited where I truly had the sense of what was occurring and what I was seeing around me and the uniqueness and the how special it was. So that inspired me for the next several years after I dropped out of school to save up all year long and take an annual trip to Big Bend. And then one of those years, I finally thought to myself, why am I spending all year long working at these dead-end jobs trying to save up all this money to make one trip for about a week, once a year, to Big Bend? Why don't I just work for the national parks? So you can almost, from that point on, I looked at what it took to become a park ranger. I went back to school, got a natural resource management degree, went to the Seasonal Law Enforcement Academy, got a Wilderness First Responder certification. And from there on, the ball just kept rolling. So you could almost say that Big Bend saved the path of my life, in the sense that had I not discovered Big Bend National Park as an individual, I would have kept probably on the same pathway, which would have been just simply working at the same bike shop and outdoor gear store in Austin that I've been working at for several years. Whereas this park, so it's almost like a meta kind of thing, because this park saved the trajectory of my life. At the same time, I'm giving back to the Park Service for doing that. So I don't know if that makes any sense or not. Or
yeah, like a circle of life.
Yeah, circle. Yeah, circle of life. You know, Simba and all that. But yeah, totally. So my mentality now, in terms of being a park ranger, is that it's almost as if I do this job out of gratitude for these amazing places, for giving me the inspiration to change the direction of my life. That's why I became park ranger. Yeah.
And what are all the parks that you have worked at?
We go through the whole list?
Yeah, list it.
Okay, here we go. So this is in chronological order. So White Sands, at the time it was White Sands National Monument. Now it's White Sands National Park. After that was Arches National Park, Canyonlands National Park, then back to Arches National Park, and then Death Valley National Park. And while I was there, I did do a detail at Sequoia National Park. And then here, Grand Canyon National Park. And while here, I also did a detail at Big Bend National Park, the original inspiration. And in 2 weeks, I'll be going to Mount Rainier National Park. What is that? Is that nine?
That's nine.
Holy cow.
In how many years?
In 15 years. Yeah, 15 and a half years, I guess you could say. We're a little bit past my actual 15-year anniversary. So
cool.
Nine parks, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never actually stopped to count.
Gotta do one more, and then
make it an even 10.
Kate, why did you become a park ranger?
The short answer is to help people. The long answer is I always worked in parks, but as a guide or a nonprofit employee, and I moved up to Grand Canyon and I was a secretary for the Grand Canyon Conservancy. And I got a couple job offers out of the Grand Canyon and I wanted to stay here. And I actually met my current supervisor at a ladies book club, which is ironic because I don't like reading. But I didn't have any friends. I was here working as a secretary and it was winter and there's not a lot going on. And so when I turned down these other jobs, I pulled aside my current supervisor and was like, "What, you're a park ranger, what do you do? And she, in her wisdom, said, "I'll do you one better and show you." And she let me volunteer as a wilderness ranger here. But I took 3 years of watching all of the protection rangers around me work before I decided that I wanted to do law enforcement. And I think the backcountry rangers at Grand Canyon are such a phenomenal, storied, creative, balanced work group that I decided that law enforcement was the right choice for me. I've had lots of good mentors in this work group. It's not at all what I would have expected out of a law enforcement work group, and I never in my 33 years of living would have said that I wanted to be a police officer, but after watching people do it and really make positive change, I decided it was a good fit, and I'm happy so far.
Book club.
Book club. Ladies book club. Still don't read. I should.
You're a park ranger.
Brendan reads and then we hike and he tells me everything I need to know about the world.
Yes.
This is another collaboration.
But not verbatim. Mostly we're paraphrasing of books.
Yeah.
So Kate, have you, this is a question for me, have you worked at other parks or is Grand Canyon your only park that you worked at?
I did a graduate fellowship in Joshua Tree. And then I was an intern at the Southeast Arizona Park, so Coronado National Memorial, Chiricahua, Fort Bowie. But I don't have a science degree, so I never qualified to work in those positions. But I worked guiding in North Cascades and Yosemite. Mm. Yeah. I think that's the extent of it. So it's always been peripheral.
Yeah.
What does that count as? Maybe 3 whole parks out of, like...
I think if we count the monuments, that was 7.
Yeah. I was just saying, like, the Southeast, that's 3 right there.
Yeah.
There you go.
You know, mm-hmm. One shot.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm really happy here. I think about, you know, how Jacob has worked in 9 parks over 15 years. And we also have rangers that have worked their entire careers here. And, yeah, I'd be curious to hear what you think about moving versus staying put and what benefits that has.
Right now?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, how is your experience as a park ranger different by being able to migrate like that?
It's interesting in that being able to move as often as I have, which if you only count the parks where I didn't do details, but where I was assigned to as a primary park, and that's where I work. You know, it's about on the average every 5 years or so I move to a new park. And what it allows is 5 years is in a sense it's a really short period of time, but it's also a long period of time. You know, it's long enough in that at any given park that I've worked at for that period of time, it gives you a sense of becoming a part of the community of employees and other residents within a park. It allows you to become that local that understands the geography and geology and the layout of the place. Even a place as big as Death Valley, you know, larger than the state of Connecticut, you still, just by virtue of both working and living in that location, gives you a true sense of a deeper understanding of the place, more so than even, say, for instance, a visitor who visits a national park many times over many years. But again, the 5 years is also pretty darn short, because as you mentioned earlier, there are quite a few park service employees who work their entire careers in one park. And I can say pretty definitively that I'll never have that depth of knowledge that some of these individuals have. You know, just here at Grand Canyon, we can point towards Shores, our volunteer, as well as Della, who's been here her whole career, I think, mm-hmm. other than her field training. And, of course, Bill Vandegraaff, who retired a few years ago, he worked his entire career here.
Mm-hmm. Betsy
has, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Betsy's worked her entire career here. And even at Death Valley, I can point towards gentleman by the name of Dave Brenner, who worked his entire career as a park ranger at Death Valley National Park. And any one of these individuals, you can go up to them, and you as an individual who's worked at the park for several years has a certain foundational base of knowledge as to how the park runs, where everything is, and all that. But these individuals who worked their entire career at these just one park, it's just that much deeper and that much more of an intuitive understanding of how things all work. So yeah, the moving between parks every 5 years or so, it's both too short and too long, or too short and not long enough, or not short enough, and however you want to phrase it, right? It's the time period can be looked at as both not long enough or way too long. If that makes any sense?
Yeah.
So, but we'll see. Couple weeks and I'm out of here.
We're gonna miss you.
It's gonna be 100 degrees colder.
This is probably quite literally true. Okay, so Kate Ash had a question for you. So you described the parts that you have worked at. Are there any parts that you would like to work at? Any dream park? Is there a dream park or dream parks?
So many parks.
I think it's currently 114 degrees outside.
And in the shade.
In the shade. And I am from the desert, and I love the desert. But I have a master's in wilderness management, and the desert wilderness is so different from the mountain wilderness. And I would really love to work in another, like, vast Western American wilderness complex just to see something different. I mean, we've got two dams on the Colorado River through here and millions of acres. But I'd be really curious, like, what does it look like at North Cascades? What does it look like at Death Valley? What does it look like in Yosemite? And then on a personal note, I love rock climbing, and I rock climb in Grand Canyon, and I haven't died yet, but the rock quality is utterly miserable. So on a personal front, I would love to live in a place with, like, good quality rock climbing.
That nice grade.
Like Yosemite. Yeah.
You
don't literally rip rocks out of the wall.
Exactly. However, I never wait in line to climb here, so that is a benefit. So.
This is. I guess it's a trade-off.
Yeah.
I do want to continue to work in a place, though, that has a really vast amount of resources, I think. The big parks have a lot of politics and a lot of division between work groups. And having worked in a smaller park, I saw how cohesive that experience is. Like, when you're working side by side with the science division and the interpretation division and the planning division. And so I hope that wherever I go, I will be encouraged to do some multidisciplinary work. I think we get that here, but it's because we're some of the only ones actually walking around in it 365 days a year.
Right. I feel like working in the Canyon District, we're a small park within a really big park. We're kind of our own little world or ecosystem down here.
We have a good relationship with the concession operation at Phantom Ranch, the wastewater treatment plant operator, interpretation, volunteers, law enforcement, emergency services. You're right, we are.
Mule wranglers.
Wranglers.
Wildlife people as well.
And plant people.
And the plant people.
Give a shout out there.
Don't forget the plant people, yes.
I've been trying to include the fisheries people because we have so much water and so many fish here. So, you know, they're... I feel like fish are the least glamorous sometimes, and I'm making every effort to inform the public about our aquatic ecosystems. Mm-hmm. You got to keep working on it. This place is alive.
It doesn't feel like that when it's 114, but it is.
Even the ravens and squirrels are not out today.
So you listed all of the different titles you have. What is the title you're most proud of?
I think the title that I'm most proud of is like victim or witness advocate. I think especially as a woman in law enforcement, I've started to see the world through new eyes, and it's my job to know what resources are available to victims. And I never had the empowerment of knowing what like legal resources are due to people and who qualified as victims. And I think I've made probably the most impact in people's lives by knowing what's appropriate for them and helping connect them with those resources. We have a county victim witness advocate here who's wonderful, who picks up where I make the connection, but I really like being able to follow up and help people get either the financial restitution or the counseling or the legal services that they need. And two, recognizing that like sometimes some of those services are like counseling or like seeing a psychologist, like trying to take the issue that I have at hand to address and provide continuing care through that, like advocating for victims or witnesses. Yeah.
Thank you.
So I guess the funny thing in terms of what I consider the hat that I'm most proud to be wearing is that it's also the duty that's assigned to me that I feel the least confident in. And you might even argue that it's one of my least favorite duties, but it really just boils down to emergency medicine. And the reason why is that I can point to at least three separate times in my career where my knowledge in emergency medical services, emergency medicine, has directly saved a human life. And I can't say that about the law enforcement aspect of my job or even the firefighting aspect. I mean, that's just saving property, really, more than anything. I never actually rescued anyone from a fire. Same with even search and rescue. I mean, it's arguable as to whether individuals we find were gonna die without our intervention, you know, whether it was imminent or whatever. So in terms of all those hats that Kate and I talked about earlier, I can only point to EMS and say that aspect of my job actually saved people's lives. So even though it's something that I still struggle with, and this is 15 years on as an EMT, and I still struggle with this sometimes, and I sometimes am really reluctant to undertake it, maybe because I'm still not certain about all my skills and my abilities. Despite all that, it's something that I'm most proud of because of the fact that it definitely has had a very measurable, concrete, positive impact on other human lives.
Thanks to Brendan, Kate, and Jacob for sharing their stories and perspectives. Since this recording, each ranger has moved on to a different park. Brendan is at North Cascades, Kate is at Glacier, and Jacob is at Crater Lake. The Behind the Scenery podcast is brought to you by the interpretation team at Grand Canyon National Park. We gratefully acknowledge the Native people on whose ancestral homelands we gather, as well as the diverse and vibrant Native communities who make their homes here today.